Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Wednesday, join us as we explore heart health and homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath, Debbie Brook, with Dr. Otto Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Brock, founder of Homeopathy World Community. Today is June 27th, 2012. This is show number 26. Please pardon my previous numbering, which I think was not exactly linear. And with our co-host, Dr. Adil Chimthalawal Kasim, who is with us, calling in from India. Fourth generation homeopath. We are so very blessed to have him speak with us each week, and his renown is getting out there because on the Blog Talk Radio top health shows, he's up there on the top page. So he also keeps very busy at his medical clinic and his educational institution. You can learn more by going to Dr. Otto's website, which is www.homeacad.org. That's HOMEOACAD.org, where you can also find a form if you wish to ask a question or contact him. We love to answer your questions on the air, and I understand he's gotten quite a number of questions this week alone. So go ahead and open up the live chat right now. Give us some feedback. The more the merrier. You have time right now even to go over and use the click to tweet on Twitter or go to Facebook and get your friends to join us with this study group. Remember, this is simply an educational broadcast. If you have a medical condition, you must contact your health care provider. So we
Hi.
How your sound is kind of fuzzy today. You might want to make an adjustment to your headset or maybe sign out and call back in again. Keep talking.
Okay. Can you hear me properly now?
It's very low sound for me for some reason. Are you able to hear me okay?
Yeah, perfectly well. I can hear you perfectly well.
Okay, so, but I'm not getting a real loud sound. So let me see if it's my, I'm wondering if it's my headset needs to be adjusted. Okay, so why don't you go ahead, and if anybody on the chat who's listening to us can tell us how the sound level is, we would love to get some feedback from others.
Indeed. Is there anyone?
Yes, there's two people right now waiting.
Well, I don't think any feedback is there.
Okay, no feedback. Okay, just go ahead and talk. I think we'll be okay.
Okay. Well, five people have asked me different questions, and I'm so happy that they listen to our shows and they're learning from them. And quite intelligent questions have been asked, and I'll try to answer them before we go on to the next rubric or the sub-rubric of constriction. The first question is, this time we are all from India. The first question is from Dr. Viraj Shah. He says, "Sir, I am doing my MD in homeopathy from a place called Anand in Gujarat. And I have been hearing all your shows right from the very beginning. I have a question to ask. And the question is, I have a patient aged around 45 years. He has been diagnosed with aortic regurgitation. And in his history, there's a particular symptom that he feels better with walking than at rest. Could you tell me the reason why? Well, very good question asked, Viraj. Normally, a cardiac patient should complain of breathlessness, chest pain or constriction by walking or by exertion. But people of aortic regurgitation feel better with walking. This is because it's related to increase in heart rate. When the person starts walking, your heart rate keeps on increasing. And this increase in heart rate decreases the amount of aortic regurgitation. Aortic regurgitation means the aortic valve is not working properly. So the blood which has entered from the ventricle to the aorta goes back from the aorta to the ventricle when the ventricle is in diastole. So this is called aortic regurgitation. That means valve failure. Now in such patients, when the patient starts exercising or walking, it decreases the aortic regurgitation, and this causes the fall in peripheral vascular resistance. The aorta, the aortic valve, WALL valve, not valve, offers something called as resistance, peripheral resistance. And peripheral resistance and cardiac output together make what we call as the pulse. So there's a falls in peripheral vascular resistance, and it decreases the degree of aortic regurgitation, and that is why it is one of the conditions in heart or heart diseases wherein you will find that the patient is better with walking than at rest. So this was the first question from Dr. Viraj Shah from Anand.
Is this a condition that can be helped at all by homeopathy, or does this need repair, a surgical repair?
Well, it is a condition which for many years we can help the patient. If the aortic regurgitation is mild to moderate, they do not require surgical repair. But if it's severe enough, if it is causing symptoms, then yes, surgical repair is required. So, but in quite many patients, we have lots of patients who have been following us, and they have been kept from mild to moderate. In fact, we have a specific remedy there in Borix Materia Medica called as Galanthus Nivalis, G-A-L-A-N-T-H-U-S, Galanthus Nivalis, N-I-V-A-L-U-S. Initially, when I started using this remedy, reading this remedy, it is a specific remedy for aortic regurgitation and the symptoms caused therein. I used to ask myself, how was this possible? Because aortic regurgitation is a structural anomaly. So, in spite of being a structural anomaly, how can the symptoms reduce? But then I said, let's try. So, I tried in my first, second, third patients and I found results. I mean, drastically, there was definite reduction in the symptomatology of the patient. And this remedy, Galanthus, although a very unknown remedy, 90% of homeopaths would not be knowing this remedy, but it's an excellent remedy, particularly for this condition, aortic regurgitation, wherein the heart is decompensated. That means the compensation or the adjusting capacity of the heart is lost, and thereby it gives way, thereby causing lots of symptoms like breathlessness, like the mean pulse pressure is very high. For example, the systolic pressure may be as high as 180 to 200, and diastolic can be as low as 60 millimeters of mercury. So there you have a wide variation, a wide gap between the systolic and diastolic pressure, which is very characteristic of aortic regurgitation. So when you start using this drug, Galanthus Nivalis, I've used it in mother tincture form, even I've used it in potency, and I've found, at least I've used it in 18 patients over a span period of 10 years. And not a single patient has complained therein of. I mean, we have been able to maintain this condition and let them not progress from mild to moderate or moderate to severe. So that's a very good, help a homeopath can give to their patients. Not all patients of aortic regurgitation require surgery. Only certain patients who are not helped by routine medications, they're still symptomatic, their life is, the quality of life is deteriorated, then yes, one may go in for surgical repair. So it is not a dictum always that you find aortic regurgitation, you find this condition on echocardiogram and go in for surgery. No, I don't think so.
Wonderful. So when I see that snowdrop blooming in the spring, I will think of you. I will think of this.
And second question has been asked by Dr. Sanjay Chandrakar. He says, "Sir, I am a homeopathic practitioner practicing at a city called Raipur since last 5 years. I do get a few cardiac patients. I want to know something about a drug called as Fasciolus. Could you please throw some light on it?" Very well, Sanjay. Good question asked. Well, Fasciolus, the full name is called Fasciolus Nana. N-A-N-A. And the spelling is P-H-A-S-E-O-L-U-S. It is a legume. And it is also called as dwarf bean. Many people would know it better by the common name, dwarf bean. And actually the crushed beans, they are macerated. And in 5 parts of the crushed bean and alcohol is mixed. And you prepare the tincture and then they're in the potency. Well, very recently, I've been it's a wonderful remedy for cardiac condition, especially for arrhythmias. And also for congestive cardiac failure, wherein I have a patient who is, very coincidentally, who is at this time on my Skype. I don't know whether I should take his name or not, but still, he's very, 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 very much on Skype, and he's active now. So I hope he's listening to this program.
Did you want him to be on the show?
No, I did not. It's absolutely a coincidence that this question has been asked, and I'm going to give the a case of one of the person who is on my Skype, and he's active now, as of now.
Okay.
So, whether he's listening to the show or not, I don't know. But then he's a 21-year-old male from a city called Lucknow, quite far from Nagpur. And this gentleman is having dilated cardiomyopathy. Dilated means expanded, cardio means heart, and myopathy means affection of the heart, a permanent heart failure. Now, this boy has been having this condition from the age of 12 years. So it's now nearly 9 to 10 years that he's been suffering. And he's already on pacemaker. And the pacemaker's dual-chambered pacemaker. Dual-chambered means both the chambers, the atria and the ventricle, have been installed with a pacemaker. But the very fact that a pacemaker has a certain amount of life, and the life is in many cases more than 10 years. But very unfortunately for this gentleman, he has been changed with this pacemaker 4 times in the span period of 10 years. It's a very sad thing. Now, he came to me in, I think, February 2012, because again he has been asked to change the pacemaker. His ejection fraction, the pumping capacity of the heart, was reduced to 12%, 1-2. And this person is an engineering student. Marketing student. He's doing marketing in Delhi. And he stays in hostel. Parents are worried about. And the life is at stake. Now, what to do? I mean, keep on changing pacemakers. Is that the only treatment? So they must have heard from somewhere. And they came to me in February 2012. They were referred from Lucknow to me. I took the entire history. And initially, I gave him 1 dose of glycopodium, which is his constitutional remedy, followed by strophanthus 6. From February to March, there was no results because they did an echocardiogram again. So the ejection fraction had sticked itself to 12, although he was on lacylactone and digitalis, allopathic digitalis and lacylactone. I had not stopped those drugs. Yet his ejection fraction was, so March was the date given for him for changing the pacemaker, and he was very perturbed. He just did not want to do that. So he asked me again, "Doc, can I come back to Nagpur and will you please suggest some other medicine? Just give me one try. Hopefully I can do." He also knows that dilated cardiomyopathy is an incurable condition. I said, "Very well." So I searched the book and I tried Fasciolus. Fasciolus we could get lay our hands on. 1x potency, and we started twice a day. And believe me, on April 23rd, he called me again. I had no great hopes that from 12% it may increase to 14 or 15%. That's what I was hoping. On 23rd April, he called me and he was so joyous and telling me that the ECHO report showed that the ejection fraction had come to 28%. So double, from 12% it jumped to 28%. He was absolutely asymptomatic. And as of now, his cardiologist said that there's no need for changing the pacemaker. We will continue. And he's still on Fasciolus 3X. So it's April, May, June. He's on 1X, 2X and 3X. Now 3X is continuing. And I don't know if he has heard this conversation. He might add to it. So this is a very wonderful experience which I've got with Fasciolus Nana. Recent experience. And this is not my first case of Fasciolus, using Fasciolus. I have used it in multiple cases in ICCU. But in very high potency, say 1M and 10M, when patients suffer from ventricular arrhythmias. When you have got ventricular arrhythmias, it's very difficult time to manage such patients in ICCU. Many times allopathic drugs, the only allopathic drug available is Cardiron. You give it in a drip form. You may also give it in tablet form, but then many times you may fail. I remember, recall a case I had about a year ago. This case, again, a young married man, aged 24 years, and he had come to me with severe ventricular arrhythmias. Now, this gentleman initially, before coming to me, that means six months before coming to me, he started having arrhythmias and he used to suddenly collapse. So first time they did not know what was the condition, they rushed him to the hospital. Luckily, the hospital was well equipped with all cardiac facilities. They gave him a DC shock and the person revived. So he has been experiencing death at least about 7 to 9 times because he suddenly collapsed, no pulse, no blood pressure. The only chance was to give a DC shock and the patient used to come up. Then they implanted a pacemaker wherein the patient used to have ventricular flutter or ventricular fibrillation. There is a very fast beating of the ventricles, with rates going up to more than 360, 400 beats per minute. At that time, he used to get shocks. Now, once the pacemaker was installed, from 3.5 to 4 months before coming to me, he used to get daily shocks. And this gentleman was in military. He was working in the army. He is still rather working in the army, and his life had become a hell. He said, "Doc, I can't just work. Just imagine you getting shocks day in and day out to keep your heart alive." So that was a very bad, sad situation. And then, again, I chose this remedy, Fasciolus. And initially, when he had come to me, the shocks were too many. So I had started him Fasciolus 10M daily over a period of 1 week. And drastically, those the episodes of ventricular flutter had reduced. And then for maintenance dose, we came back to Fasciolus 1X. Now it's practically 1 year. He is on now, every month we increase 1X, 2X, 3X, 4X, 5X. So he must be now around 12 to 13X. I exactly don't remember the rows. And he's doing quite well. He's still in the army. Such people they have to leave the army because of their condition. But then he's still in the army and doing quite well. So two very, very good cases of Fasciolus with me. I have got Sanjay. Of course, you can get lots of information. This drug has been proved way back in 1897 by Dr. A.M. Cushing. So he has reported this in a journal which is now, I don't know whether you have heard or not, the Homeopathic Recorder. Homeopathic Recorder is a very, very old journal. Was published in US. I don't know whether it's still published or not. But you can actually get this entire first proving done by Dr. A.M. Cushing himself. And he then applied it on 5 different patients. And in that Homeopathic Recorder, he has given all the 5 cases, all of different subsets of arrhythmias, which unfortunately he could not at that time tell us what sort of arrhythmias they are. But now since we have got availability of EKG, that is electrocardiogram, and the various other modalities, we can pinpoint the correct usage of Fasciolus in correct potency in different types of ventricular arrhythmias. So Fasciolus Nana, a wonderful drug for ventricular arrhythmias.
Very good. Okay, do you want to keep going with your question and answers? You've had so many very enlightening. We're learning about different remedies, different drugs that are used, and the progress and how you have to make adjustments. I also was looking up, I don't know whether this is true, the Phaseolus vulgaris. Is that a different bean from the Phaseolus nanus?
Yeah, it's a different bean. And this is what Phaseolus nana is, what is that's an important remedy, cardiac remedy.
Yes, and I see that it's for diabetic urine, and we compare it to Crataegus and Lachesis.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And another another question is from Dr. Oliver from Goa. And he says, congratulations, Dr. Adil. I have been hearing your blog talk radio shows for quite some time. And I have been practicing at Goa since past 15 to 17 years. And could you please throw some highlights on medications, the different types of allopathic medications, and the importance of the history of medications, and how, what do they cause? Because we as homeopaths are not aware of those things. Very well, Oliver. Thank you very much for asking this question. It's an, again, a very, very important question, because when we deal with cardiac patients, we need to know many of the drugs or the side effects of those drugs, or the effects and side effects of these those drugs, which are very frequently used by allopathic patients. Now, one example is breathlessness. People who are on beta blockers is atenolol or any of these olol drugs, the drugs ending with olol, whichever trade name they may be given. But these drugs in patients who have asthma, so these drugs worsen asthma. So if a patient, this is basically an antihypertensive remedy, or one of the very, very good antihypertensive remedy, rather antihypertensive remedy for choice to start with in allopathy. But a person who has been having asthma, bronchial asthma, and coincidentally he or she has been detected with high blood pressure, and if the doctor starts this beta blocker and the asthma worsens, you need not panic and give more drugs for dyspnea. Just stop that beta blocker and the asthma will be controlled. So this is important to know that beta blockers should not be given. They are contraindicated in patients who are already having bronchial asthma. Not only that, if the patient who is a heart patient and develops a congestive cardiac failure or congestive heart failure, or if the patient who has been hypertensive since a long time is now going into congestive heart failure but is already on this drug beta blockers, then this heart failure may still worsen. So you need to know, instead of adding homeopathic drugs or thinking about whether you're wrong or right, it is better to stop those beta blockers right away in patients who have got congestive heart failure, because CHF or congestive heart failure worsens with the use of beta blockers. Not only that, another very good class of antihypertensive drugs which are called calcium channel blockers. Calcium channel blockers, for example, nifedipine, depins, all the drugs starting with nifedipine, verapamil. These are very, very frequently used. Again, second line of drugs, favorite drugs for allopaths to use in high blood pressure patients. So they also worsen congestive cardiac failure. If the patient is on has rheumatoid arthritis or some other rheumatic disease wherein he or she is using non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, so these drugs also worsen congestive cardiac failure. So if you have a patient of congestive heart failure and if he or she has come to you for treatment, better see that if the patient is on beta blockers or a calcium channel blocker or a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug. If it is there, then you may revert back to the physician who's treating, allopathic physician, and ask him or her to stop those drugs. I think maximum patients would respond, the symptom would respond by just stopping those drugs. Then, pain. Reflux esophagitis may occur because of nitrates. Sorbitrate or any of the nitrates are the class 1 drugs for angina. They relieve angina. A single tablet of sorbitrate is kept underneath the tongue, sublingual, and you can have relief of angina. But at the same time, nitrates tend to cause reflux esophagitis. That means once you have eaten the food, you after say an hour or so, the entire food comes out on the throat and you get heartburn and reflux esophagitis. It's very common with the use of nitrates, again with calcium channel blockers. So you have to see to it that patients complaining of reflux esophagitis. Reflux esophagitis, one of the finest drugs we have in homeopathy, is asafoetida. Asafoetida is very commonly has been used over centuries in India for reflux esophagitis. In homeopathy also, we have this drug for reflux. But before giving those such kinds of drugs, it is better to see if the patient is on nitrates or on calcium channel blockers, stop those drugs or curtail the doses of those drugs, and you will see that the reflux esophagitis goes away. Many patients also complain of central chest pain. I mean, for example, if I'm a heart patient, I'm already on certain drugs like calcium channel blockers, and I get a pain which is exactly located in the center, and this chest pain is continuous in nature. The doctor may keep on thinking that it's a cardiac pain because I'm already a cardiac patient, not thinking that calcium channel blockers also tend to mimic ischemic pain, esophagitis. So you stop those drugs and the pain goes away. So instead of doing certain actively for those for this condition, this chest pain, it is better to withdraw drugs and or at least replace them with some other class. But provided you know that calcium channel blockers also cause esophagitis, which may mimic ischemic chest pain, which is exactly in the center of the chest, that is on the sternum. Then another very important side effect of calcium channel blockers is edema or swelling on the legs. For example, if a patient is, has hypertension, he or she has been started with the calcium channel blocker since 1 year, 2 years, nothing happens. Patient, the BP is well settled, but slowly and steadily the patient starts noticing slight amount of edema over the feet at the end of the day. For example, if I'm a banker and I have to sit the whole day, the moment I return home or come home, I start feeling tightness of my socks and my shoes, and I see that there's a pitting edema. So now there can be two conditions. Blood pressure has worsened and it is causing a strain on my heart. That strain on my heart is leading to failure and that is causing edema. But much more commoner is because of the drugs. Calcium channel blockers tend to cause edema, and the moment you withdraw the calcium channel blockers, even for a week or so, the edema disappears. So this is another very, very common important thing, fluid retention because of use of calcium antagonists, like particularly nifedipine. Also use of steroids as well as all non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, they tend to cause edema. Then we have got another symptom, palpitation, a very, very common cardiac symptom. Breathlessness, chest pain, swelling over the feet, we have discussed. They are all cardiac symptoms. These symptoms mimic cardiac pathology. Palpitation, either tachycardia or any form of arrhythmia, is very, very common due to a drug called salbutamol. Salbutamol is the first line of drug to be used in bronchial asthma in allopathy. Either you use them in tablet form or you can use them in pump form, I mean inhalation form, or you can use them in intravenous form, whatever form you want to use. But salbutamol does cause a great amount of palpitation and tremors. Of course, it does not cause right away. It takes a period of time, so say 1 year, 2 years or 3 years. But a patient who has been continuously on salbutamol, if a patient comes to you and he or she is suffering from bronchial asthma and complains of palpitation, don't think right away that the palpitation is because of some heart condition. Better think that there's a drug-induced palpitation. It can be because of salbutamol, it can be because of theophylline. Theophylline is another basic drug of allopathy used worldwide for combating asthma. Again, Lanoxin or Digitalis or Digoxin. Allopathic Digitalis also causes great amount of palpitation. And moment a patient who's on Digitalis for a long time starts experiencing recurrent palpitation, it is time to test serum Digitalis levels, because this is indication of very probable sign that the person has entered Digitalis toxicity. So it's a time to stop Digitalis. So in such situations, you have to ask the history whether the patient is on Digitalis for what reason the patient was put on digitalis, measure the serum digitalis levels, which are very, very easily measurable and it does not take much time. And if they have crossed the normal limit, then it is wiser to stop digitalis, replace it with homeopathic digitalis, Q, mother tincture, or at least in potency if the patient agrees. But anyhow, stop digitalis and you'll see that palpitation goes away. And lastly, nitrates and statins. Nitrates, again, which I've mentioned. Statins. Statins are drugs which reduce cholesterol levels. And you have got atorvastatin, we have got simvastatin, and many other group of drugs, statins. Now, if a patient who comes to you of, say, heart attack or angina pectoris, and he's already on nitrates and statins, one of the very, very characteristic symptoms he or she is likely to complain is a recurrent headache. Especially, nitrates would be an immediate headache. Sir, I have taken the tablet and within 15 minutes, I get a very terrible headache, a crushing type of pain. The pain is bad, more bad than the angina experience. So please stop those that drug. I will rather bear the angina rather than the headache. Such is the symptom, complaint the patient comes off with nitrates. But on the other hand, statins. Statins are generally taken at night, just before the patient is about to sleep. After dinner, say 1 to 1.5 hours after dinner, the patient takes statin. And the patient sleeps after taking statin. Next day morning, he gets up and he complains of heaviness of the head or a severe headache. Now, one may think that this patient person has got a tension headache or a stress-induced headache or a migraine and keep on treating in such manner, not knowing that statin could be a simple causative factor or an exciting cause for this headache. So it's much better to stop statins and very easy to withdraw statins because nothing happens if you immediately withdraw statins. Nothing happens to cholesterol levels also. So this is on the whole, I mean, some common medications and their side effects which mimic cardiac symptoms to a great extent.
That's great. Now, only we need to have more people know the steps to take and recognize the connection between the drugs and their side effects, and then what do you do? Because people feel at a loss if they take if they're taken off of their drug. They feel very dependent upon it for keeping them alive in many instances.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's, obviously, the doctor, the cardiologist definitely knows the side effects, and many patients may have been warned, may not have been warned. See, always the doctor does not warn verbally. You may, if I'm a cardiologist, if I have a patient who's very hypersensitive, I will not tell him or her all the side effects which with the particular drug. Rather, I would write it down for her or him. But then there are patients who do not read those doctor's prescriptions or the warnings. Number one. Second, many doctors ignore. Nothing happens. Just take the drug, nothing happens. Third, the doctor has told you or the doctor has written on the prescription that these are the side effects or these could be the side effects. But the patient goes to another physician for another complaint. For example, for a headache, he or she may go to a physician, a regular physician or a neurologist instead of the cardiologist. So the neurologist may not know the history of patients. I mean, if he has not asked the history of the cardiac drugs, he may plainly give it another diagnosis and restart the entire treatment. Same way with homeopath. If the homeopath does not ask the entire drug performer and does not take the pain to go through each drug and the side effects, allopathic drugs and the side effects, then you may land up unnecessarily giving drugs, homeopathic drugs, and not facing good results because the maintaining factor that that drug which has caused the entire thing is still continuing. So it becomes a terrible situation. We feel that in spite of selecting the best simillimum, the best selected remedy, it's still failing, it's not acting. But how can it act? You have not removed the offending factor. You have not done anything about the offending factor. Rather, you have not even thought of the offending factor. So it is also for the patients to understand that they have to give all the drug symptom history, the entire history of whatever the drugs they have been taking for a period of time and for what reason to the new physician if they approach. That is very important.
So we have to educate everyone,
in fact, the patient
yeah. and the physician.
Exactly.
Were there any more questions from the listeners?
No, these were the questions which I have summed up. There were other two, but then we'll not be able to complete because it's already we have taken 40 minutes of the entire program for just answering the questions.
Okay, that's okay. We can do whatever we want. It's our show, and it's the people's show. That's why we're here. We're here to serve the people. And as a matter of fact, I have a quote for today that I thought you would like because I didn't say it at the beginning of the show. It is by Sri Sathya Sai Baba, an Indian spiritual leader in 1926, born in 1926. He says, quote, service has been defined as love made manifest. Baba repeatedly asks us to expand our hearts to include all humanity. He tells us that to care only for our own interests and those of our families is a constriction of our heart. Such constriction eventually results in loneliness and unhappiness, as indeed we can see all around us, for it is the malady of the present age. And I selected that because our topic is constriction.
Yeah, and exactly, and how true it is in today's time.
So there is a little something from a wise sage.
Exactly. Well, it's so, I mean, people keep on saying these philosophical things, but how few people actually adopt them in practice. It's just, I mean, I don't know how many people actually adopt them in practice. But then, all said and done, it's our duty also, via this show, to educate people, as has Baba done.
Well, you know, I will corroborate with you on, I'm on the internet a lot, I'm on social networks and Facebook, and everybody is posting up their little pictures and quotations and everything to enlighten and motivate us, and I do wonder how many people really put those words into their active daily life and take action on them. But you know what? Just reading them and visualizing them is doing something to change our being, to change our chemistry and our thinking when we're constantly putting into our mind some good thoughts.
Exactly. Another question which I would, before we start on to constriction, the last question which I'm going to answer on this show, it is from Dr. Pratibha Dangre. Dr. Pratibha Dangre is from Nagpur, and she has asked me that how do you differentiate chest pain? Which is the probability of a heart attack and an angina? I mean, what are the probabilities of a chest pain being a heart attack? How do you identify? Well, a very good question, and rather everyone should know that how to identify that not all chest pains are heart attack pains, however severe they may appear to be. There are certain characteristics which a physician picks up, and over a period of time, a trained cardiologist, the trained eye of the cardiologist, picks up very fast, just seeing the patient, certain characteristics. And one of the important characteristics is not the intensity of the pain. I agree that heart attack pains are the most intense pains experienced in any of the diseases. There are only 4 to 5 diseases which I know which can experience such amount of pain. The first is obviously heart attack. Second is pancreatitis, acute pancreatitis. Third is gallstone colics. That is cholelithiasis. Fourth is renal stone colics. And fifth is herpes zoster, the burning pain of herpes zoster, which occurs, post-herpetic neuralgia, which is called. These pains are known to be the worst pains, and they are very, very terrible in nature, of which heart attack is one of them. So one of the very principal features of a heart attack pain would be perspiration or sweating. A person who complains of this intensity of pain would not shout, may or may not shout or whatever, but definitely would have profuse perspiration. One, if not perspiration, then a persistent sensation to go for urination. If not that, a person sensation to go for stools. Now, these are three are called as autonomic symptoms. Autonomic symptoms never lie. So, even if the patient is shouting, a hysterical patient or a functional patient can shout to the top of the voice, I am having my chest pain, I am having my chest pain. That does not matter. What is important is chest pain occurring along with autonomic symptoms. And the commonest is sweating. If it is there, then the probability of a heart attack is very high. Secondly, if the patient is saying that the chest pain radiates to the right shoulder or the left arm or both right and left side, then it is most likely to be a heart attack rather than simple angina pectoris or chest pain because of any other cause. It's very, very likely to be a heart attack. On the other hand, if the patient is complaining of a very sharp or a stabbing pain, but only localized to a particular area, say the left side or right side or the center, it increases by inspiration on expiration. It is more likely to be a pleuritic pain rather than heart attack pain. So the probability of myocardial infarction is not more in such patients. A patient would not complain, can complain of sharpshooting pain, not that. But a pleuritic pain may not have sweating, or may not have, the patient will not say, I want to go for urination or that sort of things. The patient would be fairly comfortable, although complaining of continuous chest pain. So heart attack pains, two things, radiation matters. Second, autonomic nervous system matters. And third is, it's very, very unlikely that you may not get either very severe tachycardia, that means increase in pulse, or a missed beat, or low pulse. Any of these things are very, very likely during a heart attack. So these are the features you can see in a patient, and without even doing any investigations, you can come to a fairly logical conclusion that this person has got a heart attack or is experiencing a heart attack.
May I make a comment about that?
Please do so.
Okay. One would be the person's complexion. Would we see something in their facial, either expression or the tone, the color of their face?
Yeah, but in all pains, we will see that. See, if you have got any pain, the chest pain, if it's severe enough, then the person may wince, may seem anxious, may seem, and the entire facial feature would say that this person has got pain. But whether it is a pain of heart attack or because of many other reasons, you can have a pleuritic chest pain, you can have chest pain because of pericarditis, you can have chest pain because of pulmonary embolism, you can have chest pain because of severe pneumonia, you can have chest pain because of malignancy, you can have chest pain because of varied other reasons, because there's so many structures in the chest. You can have chest pains and leukemias. They're bad chest pains because the bone marrow has to produce great amount of, it's under great strain. So even if you touch, the patient is not going to allow you to touch the chest. So painful, the sternum is so painful. It's typical arnica. The patient would not allow even the touch of the stethoscope in a patient of leukemia or any myeloproliferative disorders wherein the bone marrow is in great strain to overproduce. So, but how, they're not heart attack pains, and they're not pains of emergencies. Only a heart attack pain requires due emergency, and that needs to be understood right from the entire state of disposition, what we called aphorism number 210, 211, and 212 of the Organon of Medicine. State of disposition, wherein Hahnemann says that it's only on the state of disposition that you can identify a remedy, and you should be able to identify a remedy. State of disposition and mind, aphorism number 212. So a heart attack patient definitely produces peculiar states of disposition. But on the whole, things remain more or less common. That is radiation of pain, intensity obviously is very high, and third is autonomic nervous systems along with the pain.
Okay, and my other comment was, maybe you can make some sense out of it for me, but as I hear you say the major symptoms that a person would be able to identify that this is a heart attack is the increase in profuse sweating and perspiration, and then also the need to go to the stool or to urinate frequently. All of these things seem to be very much the water element of getting it out of the body. And is that because there's so much edema that the body is trying to
No. It's a stress reflex. It's a stress. It's a body's mechanism to fight out stress and lower blood pressure. Whenever the body is in a crisis, it is the adrenaline which is in loads. I mean, the adrenaline in shot is increased by the body. So much so that the entire body undergoes a vasospasm. Then all the vessels of the body undergoes a vasospasm or a spastic state. In such a situation, the BP is too high. So to release the entire BP and to reduce the crisis of that situation, you need to give out fluids. And the best way is sweating or in the form of urination. And I'll give you one very good case. It is about, last November, 2010. Yeah, 2010. 2010 November. I've already quoted this example in one of our earlier shows, but it's relevant here since we are talking about heart attacks and water retention and this water element. It's one of the methods how you can save a person. I was traveling to a place called Durg, D-U-R-G, Durg. It's very close to Nagpur. It's around 5.5 to 6 hours from Nagpur. So I go there to see patients once in 6 months or once a year. And I sit early in the morning in the train and come back late at night at say 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the morning next day. So I had gone there. From there, I was returning back to Nagpur, and we had the train started there at 12 a.m. Between Durg and Nagpur, there is a jungle, and it's quite a good forest out there. So the train suddenly stopped. A gentleman aged around 65-66 years, he suddenly started complaining of severe chest pain. And he was great anxiety, very restless. So obviously people asked who is the doctor, and I was the only doctor available there. But unfortunately I was carrying nothing, no medications, nothing. And to his bad coincidence, no one in the entire train compartment was a heart patient or was carrying any cardiac medicines. So it was very much evident from the entire demeanor or the entire persona of that patient that he was having a heart attack. But then what do you do? And the patient and the train unfortunately had stopped in the middle of that jungle. It was not moving. Now how to save this patient? We were perplexed. Now what to do? So then I asked the fellow passengers if anyone had got some sweets. So, and this gentleman told me, Doc, I don't want to eat anything. You are forcing me to eat. Forget about sweets. Here I am suffering and here I am going to die. And you are asking me to eat something. One of the passengers was carrying an Indian Bengali sweet. So I asked him to give it to this gentleman and force him to eat about 2 or 3, 5 pieces. With great difficulty and in spite of great persistence, he ate those sweets and drank about half a liter water. And now I told him, please go for urination or see that you can, if you can vomit out. And I, till that time the train had started, but then we were quite far from Nagpur. And there was no place in nearby where we could have got down or called for an ambulance and called for help. It was 3 a.m. at night. So, moment the patient passed urination, the entire turmoil settled down. And then about say 4:30 we reached Nagpur. We called an ambulance. He definitely had a very great heart attack. We did his angiogram. Of course, he wanted to take allopathy. That was fine for him. Bypass was done about a week later, and he was completely well. So after getting discharged and going home back, he came to my clinic to pay his thanks and gratitudes. And he told me, Doc, had you not forced me to eat those sweets and not given me water, I would not have passed urine and I wouldn't have vomited. And if I had not done that, I would have died because of the chest pain. So the one of the very important things, there are times when you don't have anything at your hand, no medications. So to stop such crisis, ask the person to urinate. Once the person has urinated or once the person has vomited, the entire turmoil decreases and so does the chest pain. So it's a very effective way of managing heart attacks when you don't have anything else at your hand.
Unbelievable. This is a survivor show. This is really incredible. Oh, wow. Okay.
And, And I was so happy. These things were taught to us in medical college, but over the years we were never exposed. Such a situation had never come in our life, so we tend to forget. But then when it actually did come, and I did remember, because I was helpless, and I was cursing myself. As a doctor, I should have carried something or the other. But unfortunately, I couldn't do anything. And so that coincidence was that none of the passengers, so many passengers traveled in that entire train, but not a single person at that time was a cardiac patient or was carrying some sort of nitrates or any homeopathic, allopathic medications. It was so sad. Or even if people must be having, they did not give at that time. So we were in fact very helpless. And to add to the misery, the train had actually stopped in the middle of the jungle. So how do you call for help?
Hmm.
So in this situation, I mean, it's actually a movie. When I think of that situation, it's actually coming from an English movie. That entire movie was made and the patient was saved and finally everything was good. But then a very important lesson to learn is release out the fluids from the body, either in the form of vomiting or sweating if it is possible, or urination, or at least stools, even if the person passes flatulence or gases or eructations, the entire turmoil decreases and the patient, although the pathology does not go, but the patient is a bit comfortable, he or she comes back to his or her senses. That's a very important point to know.
Mm-hmm. Marvelous. I'm taking a deep breath from that. Okay. So, that was a wonderful story. And we can go on if you wish. I have another quote, if you like it.
Yeah, please go on.
Okay. Hermann Hesse. He's a German-born Swiss novelist and poet. He won the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1946. He says, "And every occasion when a mask was torn off, an ideal broken, was preceded by this hateful vacancy and stillness, this deathly constriction and loneliness and unrelatedness, this waste and empty hell of lovelessness and despair, such as I had now." So I suppose both of the quotes not only have constriction, but they all also have loneliness. And I apologize for all of the clicks. That's my Skype making tons of noise, and it's because I have my sound up to the highest in order to hear you. So,
no, it's perfectly normal. I mean, well with us, no problems about the click.
Okay,
both the quotes had got constriction as relation to the mind, or more towards emotions. Non-expression of emotions gives you a sense of constriction, a sense of helplessness, and that is worse than the sensation of constriction which is experienced because of heart or any other organic pathology. It's worst.
Well, and both of them, the Baba and Hermann Hesse, are both saying unhappiness, despair, lovelessness, loneliness, and death is also related to this constriction. And it says to help us expand our hearts to all humanity. The other one, and this one is, an ideal was broken, a vacancy and stillness. So, I mean, it's very closely related to our heart, to how we feel in our emotions and our mind, and how connected we are with other people and to ourselves.
Exactly. Since we have got it's nearly 10 o'clock in India now.
Okay.
At night. We need to postpone the rubric part to some other, next time.
That's good.
If it's all right. And
that is good. We can postpone and pick up next Wednesday. We're doing it at 11:30 Eastern Time, and that starts for you at 9 p.m. India.
Yeah.
And we always look forward to these incredible stories and wisdom on how to save a life, really, because it's all dealing with our heart. I would like to
appeal,
go ahead.
Yes, I would like to appeal to my listeners or all those who are around there. There are many times when, for example, in this show, we actually wanted to cover, we were doing rubrics of constriction. And yet, the questions asked, they are so important because they are all practical questions. They are not theoretical questions. They are questions, they come from life, and they are actually those difficulties faced by those numerous practitioners throughout the globe who are practicing homeopathy or want to practice homeopathy effectively. So there may be times when we may not do a particular show what we intended to do. For example, describing rubrics of Kensepatry, yes, we started with that. But in this show, we could not do. We actually have completed the show only with the questions. But then after all, this is nothing but a very, very effective method of communication and an education. Either take the help of repertory and go along, or simple answering those questions, wonderful questions which you have asked, very logical questions you have asked. That means to say that after hearing our shows, you not only hear our shows, but also after hearing our shows, you go back to your patients, apply them, go back to your books, read them, try to understand if they are not, if you can't understand, you get back to us. It's such a wonderful way of enlightening ourselves. You not only enlighten yourselves, but you also enlighten me, and as well as all those who are listening to this show. It's very, very good method. So please keep on asking questions. That is the entire ethos of this show, not what we have started out to be. And as Debbie correctly said, it's our show. It's a chat show. So whatever we want to speak, that's fine with us. So that's why question answers are always welcome.
They're the best way to learn, this question answers, a Socratic way. And also that, you know, the people who can listen to this show are not only physicians, not only allopaths and homeopaths, but just regular people in their day-to-day life. And if they have a question, we want to inform, educate, and enlighten the people who are just don't really even have a knowledge about medicine at all. But they can then go to their own doctor and say, this is something that I learned about. Is this something that would apply to me? So that's another whole set of people who can learn from us.
Exactly. And then on this show, we raise certain questions which we feel are not doing, for example, vaccinations. Time and again, we have been speaking about vaccinations. So you can actually ponder over those questions, whether I should take vaccination, I should let my children take vaccinations, and many other questions likewise. I will just give an example. So certain questions are there to ignite our certain thoughts which should go in your mind. It's absolutely a general thought. It's your right and you should know it. It's your medical right, so one should know it. So likewise, there are many other conditions. Then there are certain many conditions where you can save a life just by doing, not by medications, but by, for example, the case which I quoted last, only by drinking water and asking the patient to go for urination, you can actually save a life, which we have done. So these are small life quotes which we have undergone, and time and again, we bring it out as the situation demands. It is only for newer listeners and the people who have already listened to these shows, they can actually implement. There are times when people would feel that such things would never happen with us. Even I used to feel. But then it actually happened to me, with me, in the train. I remembered the same thing which was taught by my teacher. So after so many years, say 10, 15, 20 years of hearing, I had no use. And on that moment of my life, I could use that and I could save a life. So finish, my knowledge for that part was over. So I'm so happy that I could use it. So likewise, there are so many times when you need not remember those things, but when time comes, even in your lives, you probably may save a life.
Yes, they can save a life. And one of the themes of today's show was to be knowledgeable about side effects of drugs and to withdraw a drug to help a person that, let's see what happens if your symptoms improve, if you get better just from taking off of one or another drug. And do that with a doctor's supervision.
Yeah, and many homeopaths, at least in India I know, they say that since we are homeopaths, we need not have knowledge of allopathic drugs. But that's wrong. No. In this scenario, in these working in today's times, we have to know the side effects of those allopathic drugs, because many of our patients would be suffering those side effects, and unnecessarily we would be giving them homeopathic remedies for those side effects instead of stopping those exciting factors or those exciting drugs. So it's better to know, have a knowledge, not complete, I mean great knowledge, but yes, worthwhile knowledge for practice is very essential.
Thank you so much. I know it's late. You want to get home to your family. And I would like to close the show today by telling people, one, share the show. Put it on Twitter. Put it on Facebook. Link it in your emails. Tell people what you learned today. You can get the embed code for this widget for the radio and put it on your website so people can listen directly on your own website. Another thing that we're making a request is I produce my Health In show, and Dr. Otto will be a guest on that show in the upcoming months. And it is Nissan Communications Network, and we are asking people to vote on a Mission Small Business to just have a grant proposal reviewed. And we're needing something like 25 more votes. We need a total of 250. We need 25 more votes. And there's a link on the chat, and there's also a link on Homeopathy World Community where you just go and search for the state is North Carolina. The city is Raleigh, R-A-L-E-I-G-H, Raleigh, North Carolina, and look for Nissan, N-I-S-S-A-N, Communications Network. And then just click that vote button. All you have to do is link it up with your Facebook, and we would really appreciate your vote of confidence.
So a very, very great week throughout, Debbie, and all the listeners.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Heart Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopath Debbie Brock and Dr. Adil Chimthanawala Kasim, MD cardiologist. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when the show airs, and share with friends on Facebook and Twitter. Please send in your comments and questions, and we'll see you next time.